State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse, and is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source of music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to State of the Empire, the Star Wars speculation podcast where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
And with this episode, we're going to talk about Star Wars Celebration. This is the third celebration in Orlando, the third celebration at the Orange County Convention Center. It's the first in Orlando since we started State of the Empire formally, but we did some Nerdy Show episodes back in the day taking place in and around Celebration. And you may recall our episode following the prior celebration in the U.S. when we were all over in Anaheim. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about all the things we saw, all the things we did, the big announcements, the Episode 7 trailer. So let's talk about this show and what our expectations were going into this particular installment of Star Wars Celebration.
Well, full disclosure, I didn't go. On his plate.
Well, I mean, you're kind of in a position like we all were for Celebration Europe, though, where you could kind of like observe the proceedings on like a macro level and pay attention. And almost in a weird way, kind of like have access to information faster. And it's actually
almost.
This is a convention experience I have all the time covering convention at the convention. My editors will always know shit before I do, unless I'm like actually in the place where that's happening. You know,
right, right. I mean, it's gotten to the point like after going through the Celebration Europe experience of watching everything online and then actually being here this year, like I'm more convinced than ever. Like they have the streaming part down. I mean, no news is coming out unless it's like collectibles news without it being streamed online. Yeah, you lose out on some special things. Like they actually showed us the premiere for Rebels at the Rebels panel.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't stream that.
The first episode of season 4 of Rebels, we've seen it. And we're not going to talk about that in this episode. We're going to talk about that in our Rebels episode, which is coming soon.
Going into Celebration, my hype meters were off the charts. Like I was going into this thing thinking that we were going to get Last Jedi trailer.
Which we did.
Announcement of future films.
Which we didn't.
The Han Solo cast together, you know, the Donald Glovers and Emilia
Clarke. Are they still filming it, though?
They are. However, it would be reckless for the Han Solo cast and crew to be on site at the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
However, that has been done before by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
During the filming of Guardians of the Galaxy, they literally brought the entire cast from England over to San Diego for 3 hours and then flew them right back to get shooting again.
Yeah, and right now we're looking at a May 2018 release for Han Solo. So with no celebration planned for 2018...
But they're going to go to Comic-Con.
Comic-Con in 2018 is afterwards. Like this upcoming Comic-Con is going to be Last Jedi's Comic-Con. So they won't even be at Comic-Con next year.
So the Han Solo film, if it does have a convention-based promotion cycle at all, will not take place in the usual convention spaces.
I don't think New York
Comic-Con.
I just don't think Disney's worried about it.
And I think that's where that kind of leads to what this celebration was, as we quickly discovered. This year, it wasn't the EA Star Wars panel. It was the Star Wars Battlefront 2 panel. This wasn't the Future of Star Wars movies panel, which, as it's been named for the last two, this was the Last Jedi panel.
Mm.
And everything is now very specifically titled with no other announcements involved. Like, it's just that focus thing. And as much as, like, Celebration, they constantly market it as, like, you know, the future of Star Wars, like, learn about it. We only learned really about the near... like the short-term future of Star Wars.
Within the year.
Yeah. Exactly.
And in our prior episode of State of the Empire, we were sorting through a bunch of supposedly leaked information, which still seems very good and very credible, about the actual future outline for what's to come for Star Wars films, and assumed that at least one of these things would be dropped on us because we only know presently there's only one confirmed Star Wars anthology film to come out, and that's Han Solo that's coming out next year.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, we don't know. We know we get 8 this year, Han Solo next year, and then 9. eventually.
I mean, maybe that they just don't want to say anything until after quote unquote phase one's done, which they've never marketed these as phases like they do for Marvel, which, you know, so I don't know.
Well,
what
they might still be scrambling trying to figure out what the heck to do after Josh Trank dropped out.
Yeah,
you know,
they
like,
could be.
It's just like, all right, because, you know, when you have a movie lined up ready to go, like I'm sure they did, like, you know, copying the Marvel method, right?
Right.
As soon as they realize this movie's not getting made, everything about that changes. Like, it's not just, oh, well, let's just slide this one up a notch. You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if Boba Fett was supposed to be the third one that comes after, I don't know if they can just so easily bump it up because of all the scheduling involved with whoever they were.
Well,
had an eye on
that
as a director.
That was not
whatever.
The film we expected to be announced. The film we expected to be announced at this celebration was the Obi-Wan Kenobi
right,
solo film.
Sure. And, whichever one it is. It's like, I don't think it's that easy.
And here's the thing.
Just flip a switch and do it.
It wasn't just us. You know, Anthony Breznican published a piece not so very long ago from Entertainment Weekly. Basically, the Breznican, if you're not familiar with him, is the Lucasfilm sanctioned loudspeaker for publicizing Lucasfilm news through Entertainment Weekly. Like, he's their mouthpiece, and he had this very out of character almost op-ed where he straight up said, like, I think there's going to be an Obi-Wan film. And then the Obi-Wan film was outlined in some detail in the leak we were consulting in last episode, and I was talking with Lucas Siegel, who's listeners of Epic Podcast will know him as a guy who every time he comes on that show brings forward some information, usually about comic books, but not exclusively all the time, that ends up inevitably being some kind of true. And he and I were both on the same page about Obi-Wan and expecting something to happen. In fact, he even heard from somebody that Ewan McGregor was sighted in town. I wasn't able to verify that at all, and we don't know. But what the show opened with was a 40th anniversary Star Wars panel. And it was incredible. This entire celebration kicked off with one of the most shocking things they've ever done. They rolled out George Lucas, no prior announcement, and had him basically do a George Lucas, this is your career with, insofar as Star Wars anyway, with everybody who he's ever worked with throughout the films and television. Him talking to Dave Filoni, him talking to all of his cast from the prequels and the original trilogy, all the way up to then revealing, you know, after having Peter Mayhew and Billy Dee Williams and Mark Hamill up on the stage, here comes Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford at Star Wars Celebration for the first time ever, talking with George Lucas at a convention panel for the first time ever. And he's usually really odd in convention settings. He doesn't like being there at all. And this time, he was still a little weird, but a completely different Harrison Ford. Some good jokes, some good reminiscence with George. It was fantastic. Then top it all off, they did this incredible tribute to Carrie Fisher featuring a video, which we'll link to. It's just a tear-jerking, beautiful video. And after that video ended, this wall that we were certain was a wall opened up with curtains, and behind that was John Williams and the Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra playing Leia's theme and then doing a medley of Star Wars music. John Williams, Harrison Ford, George Lucas in the same room. I bore witness to all of it. I cannot believe it. It's one of it's of all the convention experiences in my life, I cannot believe that I saw that. This is one of the most show-stopping things ever.
It was almost perfect. I mean, it was, like I said, it was a complete retrospective. Even, you know, the prequels only being represented by Hayden Christensen and Ian McDiarmid, like, they got
And Anthony Daniels a little.
Well, Anthony Daniels, yeah, of course. And, I mean, well, actually, Peter Mayhew didn't actually do anything for Chewbacca in episode 3, right? Like, I don't think he did.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
actually,
I doubt it.
Warwick Davis.
Warwick Davis.
Yeah.
But also, like, some great, you know, weird but great video from Samuel Jackson and Liam Neeson, who were clearly weren't able to come but wanted to provide some sort of...
Sam Jackson kept the hammer down for that Mace Windu movie. I was so... I love him so much. I love his personal crusade.
Yep. Yeah.
He
did
mince
crusade
words.
Too.
He did. He made it explicitly clear how he feels. And then, like, that's what I love about it. Just...
Yeah, it's great. And, I mean, it was... I mean, terrific. And Kathleen Kennedy started out, but then walked away to, like, let George take care of this. And this has not been the MO for, like, Disney's reflection of Star Wars.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, a lot of people complained in the beginning that the only mention of Lucas in the whole Force Awakens like lead up was basically his name on the front, Lucasfilm.
Right.
You know, it's the best way to acknowledge him.
Right.
It's, you know, I mean, But they've separated themselves so well. And then to do the retrospective for the entire saga, they just let the man have like the entire panel.
Yeah.
And he was great.
It was him just chilling. I mean, I was joking to everybody, like, if at the end he said, and everyone, I just want to say that I have 2 weeks left to live, and it's been a real pleasure to know you. Like, it was so, like, this is yep. We're never going to see this happen again. If it does, it will be a fluke. This was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. This is a last hurrah for Lucas and Star Wars, and this is it.
Right, because even at 50 years, we're going to have so much Disney aspect. Like, that 10-plus years of Disney will be, will take up such a significant chunk of this sort of panel.
Of Star Wars as we know it.
Yeah, that Lucas will only, quote-unquote, own half of it,
and,
you know?
And most of our most revered, like, actors and filmmakers might be dead.
Yep.
So this... Unless something could happen, there could always be another last word. But for now, this is it, and I can't imagine them being able to pull off anything resembling this in the future.
Yeah,
it was incredible, and that's what they opened the show with. And looping around back to Obi-Wan, that whole thing was amazing. It must have taken a lot of work to put together, but weirdly, you know, they got video from Liam Neeson, they got video from Sam Jackson. They got Hayden Christensen out on the stage, mm-hmm. who is very nervous, actually, being back in the...
I couldn't blame him.
No, yeah.
Being nervous.
Yeah. He said, it's great to see all you again, which is a nice little moment. Because this is... I mean, I fucking hate those movies. I fucking hate them. Mm-hmm. And Hayden's performance in it sucked. But I don't blame him. I blame George.
Not at all. I'm, like, defensive of Hayden.
Yeah, me too.
Because you see him in other stuff, and you're like, this motherfucker was the right guy. Like, he really was.
He was the chosen one!
Yeah. He was supposed to bring a great movie, not destroy it. It's not his fault. Leave him alone.
So, but Ewan McGregor was never mentioned, spoken of, seen.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I mean, to be fair, neither was Natalie Portman, but I just go ahead and write her out of this.
They're not saying a Natalie Portman Queen Amidala prequel film.
Well, no, I know. I understand. I'm just saying, like, if it wasn't for the Obi-Wan rumors, there's nothing like different about her disappearance from this than
his. Character is like fucking dead and gone. You know,
well, Ewan still talks Star Wars. Ian still loves Star Wars.
Yeah. Ian participated in Force Awakens. I mean, he contributed dialogue.
Yeah. So this, I mean, well, here's the thing. Here's a theory. A theory, not the theory, but a theory that the press release for this event, which was very cryptic, going 2 weeks back prior to the event.
It literally drove me crazy.
Did it?
Yeah. Just thinking about it.
It said there was going to be announcements. There were no announcements. No. We're fairly certain, whether there's an Obi-Wan film or not, we're fairly certain that this panel changed shape quite a bit at the last minute. That
similar to what happened at the last celebration that we were at, when we were expecting... a spinoff, we had a panel about spinoffs, and it was just a panel about Rogue One. We're like, what about both of them? Oh, well, Josh Trank is sick. He can't be here today.
Josh Trank was going to basically announce the next film.
And then as soon as he said he's sick, we're like, wait a minute. And then sure enough,
Kathleen Kennedy later confirmed that there was a teaser produced, that there was going to be a film. She didn't say what.
Yeah.
And So
maybe a similar situation of just last minute change of holy shit.
And it's just, not finalized. But and it's such a, that press release highlighted the person, confirmed Mark Hamill's involvement, confirmed Anthony Daniels and Warwick Davis and all these people that were involved. But the headline person that press release highlighted was Hayden Christensen. Mm-hmm. Like that's whose photo was on the top of the press release. It's like, it's just... Not, you know, and I kind of talked about it last episode.
It's his first celebration, right?
It is first celebration, but like that isn't necessarily the way to draw like an audience to see specifically the George Lucas panel that it became. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably other ways, like, you know, with mentioning the Carrie Fisher tribute that they were going to have, or other ways to get people to watch it without it being Hayden Christensen is going to be involved. Mm. You know, they could have talked about people from all eras or whatever it was.
And obviously, if they, no matter how long ago they looped George Lucas in, they would want that to be a surprise. Everyone was shocked.
Right.
But it's, you know, they probably, as soon as they got George Lucas, and then it only seemed natural, like, that they could then maybe be like, we can get Harrison Ford. If George is there, we can get Harrison there. It's Carrie's tribute. He'll come out for it.
Right.
And won't everybody be surprised then? And we sure as hell were.
Yeah.
But that would then have been inappropriate to also announce an Obi-Wan Kenobi film, if such a thing were to happen. Sure.
True.
Mm-hmm. Though, so far, there's no indication that he was ever here for officially in any capacity. And if he was,
yeah, do you have an official Twitter? Let's see. We can triangulate.
I've been trying to keep track on social media, but nothing.
So it's weird. I mean, there it's possible that there is an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. We're just aggressively speculating, but it is strange that there was no talk about the future of Star Wars. There was only talk about the film that we all know is coming out at the end of the year, which is fine. Having a laser focus on that's fine, but it's contrary to the prior events and the nature of the prior events. For example, even with the promotion of this year's film, The Last Jedi, in Anaheim, the year that The Force Awakens was coming out, they had a room full of props and costumes. They revealed more about the film. They had not real information, but, you know, nuanced, fun stuff. Ship models. You know, what on earth is this flame trooper? What is that?
Yeah, wardrobe. I mean, they had Kylo's wardrobe, Rey's wardrobe, and same thing in Celebration Europe for Rogue One.
Nothing like that at this show.
No, nothing remotely like that
at this show.
Not at all. Like, no information about the new vehicles and things like that. That's the thing, is they coupled everything we saw in The Force Awakens, you know, behind the scenes at Celebration before, with, you know, supplemental information on the floor.
Could it be that maybe that year that type of stuff was only made available because Skywalker Ranch was, like, so close? Like, if they want to bring props and ships and stuff like that out, it's not as far of a trek or not as expensive to move?
I suppose. I mean, and it might lend something to that if we start to see those sorts of things trickle into Disneyland over the next couple of months.
Or D23, the Disney convention. Yep. But it was odd.
But that's the other thing. Like, but the other conventions have always acknowledged the future of...
Right.
Like, you know...
It's like they set us up for something and then didn't deliver.
There was never a word about Han Solo at this convention. Like, how do you
Han Solo the film.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like...
Yeah.
Get, you know, mention it in some sort of panel in order to get a round of applause. Like,
Warwick Davis mentioned it to Billy Dee Williams in the Billy Dee Williams panel, just of simply, the character of Lando will be, you know, brought back in the new Han Solo spinoff film. And he's like, yeah, Donald Glover is going to do a great job. He's really charismatic and whatever. And, you know, just paid it the lip service. Right. I mean, it was genuine that they, you know, wished it well, but it was... That's it. Like, you know, there was no poster, you know, no other images. No, here's a picture of everyone in costume. Just nothing.
No, like, I mean, I think it's weird that 40th anniversary panel, like, how great would have been to have a message from Alden Ehrenreich, like, or Donald Glover, like, so, both of them, like
a cell phone video of just, hey, we're on the set and look what's behind us. It's the fucking Falcon.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I guess
the crazy thing is, like, I just was never expecting Disney to only look backward at their big opening number, and then when they have that Last Jedi one, to not look beyond that. Like, and also, this is the first time the other, like, we got the full gamut of Rogue One cast, and we got the same thing for Force Awakens. This was just, you know, Finn and Rey and Luke and our new character Rose.
Yeah,
but
Kelly Marie Tran.
You know, no Benicio del Toro, no Laura Dern. No Oscar Isaac, no Monahan, no Adam Driver, no Gwendolyn Christie. Like, and what's crazy, and like, there wasn't even much recognition of Rogue One at this celebration.
And the cast of Rogue One, Felicity Jones was there signing. She was signing. She
wasn't Forest Whitaker there too?
Forest Whitaker was there. Ben Mendelsohn, Alan Tudyk was there.
The guy who played Bodhi Rook.
Riz Ahmed, yep.
Yeah. So,
they're like signing, and like that's it.
Yeah, they're signing, but everybody was signing. Hayden Christensen was signing. Like, people were signing. There was no, they did not give the cast of Rogue One an opportunity to get together on a stage and talk about their experience. And there was a behind the scenes Rogue One panel, which was great, and I attended, but like, they had these movie stars there, and they weren't using them.
They were too busy signing.
That's not true of, you know, Mark Hamill or Billy Dee Williams or anybody else. Those folks all had spotlight panels.
Well, when it comes down to the prices of the autographs, it's like, yeah, Mark Hamill and Billy Dee, how much were their autographs? I'm sure that it probably cost more than Felicity Jones and Alan Tudyk. You
Felicity
know?
Jones is an Oscar-winning actress.
I'm
just saying, like, it's not the kind of person right now at this stage in her career that she's being flown out to Orlando just to sign autographs and then go back to London or whatever.
I'm not even saying that that's what she wants. I'm saying Disney's like, okay, this is a money-making machine.
But Disney doesn't make
here,
that money.
Plug them in here. Yeah, well, who does? Who makes the money off of it?
They have an agency that works with the casting agents to, I don't know exactly the terminology here because it's kind of a weird thing, but there's a group that manages autograph signing that exist within the ecosystem of conventions, but it's not Disney.
Hmm.
So I don't, yeah.
Either way, they were misused. They should have had more.
Well, I think it's suspicious, quite frankly. We look for news in Alderaan places on this show. But I don't think that's the wrong place at all. I think it only.
What would it mean?
I think they didn't want them talking about the damn movie because
they did an interview together on the Star Wars show, like the live stream that was just in the convention hall. Mm-hmm. They never had a panel. It was just, you know, an unannounced, you know, got them up on stage probably after they did their signings because the signings were located
right over there. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, like, how strange is that? It's Rogue One's gonna end up being this weird footnote in like 5-6 years where you're kind of like, oh yeah, I remember. Like, I mean, it's more than that, obviously, but like the way Disney's treating it, it's such a one-off thing now. That
I think,
like,
they just want to keep a lid on the fact that they didn't know what they were doing. That, you know, that they had to make a lot of changes at the last minute, and that there's maybe Disney felt it was a stumble. Like, even though it sort of, you know, it stuck the landing, they thought the whole process of it was like, oh, it's risky.
And then that might
reshoots.
That might be another, like, once again, they let social media dictate too much how they need to control things. Like, part of what makes Star Wars lore so fascinating is how much is constantly being learned about the production process, how they change things and the problems they ran into. Exactly. It was one of those movies that made blockbuster filmmaking interesting. And people want to know so much about it.
People
want to
know how they make Tarkin. How they make Carrie Fisher. Yeah, like, you know, they want to know how it's done.
For some reason, I mean, you see those special features or lack of special features on the Rogue One Blu-ray, and you're just like, why do they want to keep everything so under wraps? And, like, every misturn
and everything.
But that's Disney.
See, that was Lucasfilm that did that back in the
but
day.
But at Star Wars Celebration, actually, if you wanted to see those Rogue One behind-the-scenes features, I saw them. I saw all of them. I saw some incredible panels about production design, the technical specifications of making it. We'll talk about all that on our Rogue One episode probably in a little bit today. But we have a Rogue One like 5 months later kind of episode we want to do pretty soon, reflecting on that. But it is weird. It's very weird. I don't think Disney's
ever since Disney has gotten Marvel and Star Wars, they haven't been really big on bonus features and like here's a glimpse behind the curtain. They kind of want to keep it all like magic and keep it all secret. Whereas I feel like Lucasfilm back in the day, with Indiana Jones, it was always like, hey, this is how we made it. Isn't this amazing? Look at how we had to choreograph this stunt. Look at how we had to, you know, trigger these explosions at the right time. You know, and it was really, I mean, shit, the teaser for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was a behind the scenes featurette, you know, that led up to it. It didn't even show you anything from the movie. So I don't know. I think just Disney's overly protective. They think if you know how the magic works, you'll make your own somehow.
Can't have that.
Yeah, can't have that.
But, I mean, Kathleen Kennedy did speak, you know, very highly of Rogue One. She was like, it was a risk, and we were, you know, and it turned out very well, so we'll definitely be taking that lesson to heart. Something like that I've written down somewhere. But it, you know, but you're right. Based on everything, the Rogue One, in the grand scheme of things, as time passes, could just be a weird footnote for Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, give it enough time. I mean, the characters, very unlikely, as much as I would like to see it, will we get stories of their origins? Because, you know, they just had one movie to create a lasting legacy. Mm-hmm. They probably will have some cameos in the future. Who knows? But I think their only hope was that maybe they could somehow spin off, like, a Baze and Chirrut movie if, like, the movie was hugely successful in China.
Right.
But I don't know if
it's
going to happen.
We did get an announcement at midnight the day, the very day of Celebration starting via Entertainment Weekly about Forces of Destiny, a new short animated series coming to Disney's YouTube channel in July. And it is a series, Dave Filoni's had a hand in it. It's a series focusing on the female characters throughout the Star Wars continuum. And they all feature, well, with the exception of Leia, the original actors portraying those characters, including Felicity Jones as Jyn, There's a Hera one. There's a Rey one, yeah. Sabine gets one as well. In fact, Matt and I saw the Rey one.
Oh, how was it?
It was great. It was actually and this is one of the few exclusives that we were treated to throughout this weekend. It was very short, it was like 2 minutes at most, but it was a sequence that was planned but not made in its entirety for Force Awakens. Like, it's kind of a spin on an idea they had for something that I don't know how much ever got filmed or developed.
So you don't even have to tell me, just based on your reaction, I already know there's no Constable Zuvio.
There's no Constable Zuvio. There easily could have been, but in this version, that might have overcomplicated it.
Even all this time later, when they're digging up stuff for Force Awakens, unused, still not showing up.
It's about Tito trying to steal BB-8 when Rey's on her way to
Nima outpost.
Yeah, as a cool little maneuver she pulls and shows how she operates in that environment against adversity, and it was fun and neat and bodes really well for that entire series being cool. I don't love the animation style. It's very like web flash animation looking like several years ago, not really current.
Very.
But at least the writing will be on par. The acting will be on par. You'll see some characters doing some cool stuff. And there's some weird things going on with it, including, unless this is being misinterpreted, but I believe it was pretty straightforward.
I can see how they could have miswritten it in the press release if you're going where I think you're going with Hera.
Yeah. There may be an episode that's Hera and Leia together on Endor. Let's let that sink in.
Yeah. Would they tell us that much about Hera's fate? Like, in a press release like that?
Well, in a way, they also told us that about Ahsoka's fate. So...
Well, Ahsoka's... Did they tell us when it was, though?
Okay, so there's an Ahsoka episode where she's on Yavin. And we don't know what that means. It could be any time. It could be Ahsoka on her quests before Rebels ever started. Entirely possible.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a lot of information to digest from some two-minute shorts.
Right?
Yeah. They haven't even aired yet.
Yeah, what do they mean? And there will also be... I don't know if it's a... There will be some kind of special, some kind of Forces of Destiny special on Disney XD in the fall.
Disney Channel, I believe.
Disney Channel?
Which, okay. I think has a lot to do with the way they're trying to market this outside their targeted boys market for Disney XD.
Is Disney XD a boys market anymore? I mean, with the success of Gravity Falls and Star vs. the Forces of Evil?
I mean, they're getting a lot better at it, but I mean, they still classify it that way.
Ugh.
But I can't tell if moving this to Disney Channel is to avoid that type of target, or if that's
they're reaching out. Like, they're reaching out for anyone who watches like the Sweet Life with Zach and Cody or whatever. That show's probably not even on the air anymore.
Yeah, it's probably been off.
But whatever carbon copied show they got to replace that, they're gonna slip this in there where they're reach hopefully a larger female audience and say, that's cool.
One of the most interesting things I noted was when they said that it was Disney Channel, not Disney XD. That's significant. That's cool.
What about this Endor nonsense?
Well, during Rogue One, of course, there was the call for General Syndulla, noting a promotion on Hera's part, which Dave Filoni said during the press conference for Rebels, which I attended, which I will add is a bonus perk. State of the Empire and all the shows in the Nerdy Show Network are entirely brought to you by your support. And we have a Patreon at patreon.com/nerdyshow where we make a bunch of perks available. You can get a ton at just a dollar level, including early releases. But at $5 or more, that's where you get all of our new perks from 2014 onward, including the full audio of the Rebels press conference from this year.
Oh, nice.
So little reason to help support State of the Empire if this is a show you like. That would be awesome. And I should also point out, any purchases you get through our Amazon store at nerdyshow.com/Amazon, just follow our links. That all goes to support Nerdy Show, which in turn supports State of the Empire. Anyway, as I was saying, though, he said in the press conference that the Hera's promotion to general will occur during season 4 of Rebels. And so that implies that Hera is active in the rebellion, based on her appearance in Rogue One, such as it was, and Chopper's as well. That those characters will be active long after the end of Rebels, because this isn't a spoiler, but Dave Filoni did announce that Rebels is ending with season four. It will be the end, an intended end to the show that the arcs will complete and it will wrap. So Hera's story keeps going, and it keeps going in Forces of Destiny, I would wager, because I can only imagine that this story with her and Leia on Endor simply must occur during the events of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, Leia's Forces of Destiny tie-in doll.
Actually, they're not dolls. They are adventure figures.
Adventure figures. I like that terminology, by the way, instead of even going action figure, because they kind of... I really like them.
Forces of Destiny has a tie-in toy line, and they are great.
Yes, very.
They're the proportions of a doll, mm-hmm. but with the posability and features of an action figure.
And like the look, like as far like just that adventure style, like it doesn't have the over beautification that like a doll does. It has like sort of it's hard to describe. They're really cool looking.
They're stylized.
Yes,
but they're also. They're not Barbies. There's a Luke one as well, Bespin Luke specifically.
I saw the one with Chewie with the hair that you can comb. It's
like, yeah, you can comb it, or you can cover it in mud. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
And but Leia's comes with a Wicket companion, so yeah. Wicket is involved. So I assume the
and a costume change
and a costume
her,
change.
Her Ewok gown that the Ewoks fashioned for her.
So I assume Leia's story is going to be in between. Them dispatching the two stormtroopers and then getting to the Ewok village.
So like Hera's there as part of the strike team or something? Like
that's a great question. I don't know, Doug.
Well, and that ties in with something else that's new. Because for all of our gripes about Star Wars Celebration, there was some cool stuff. There's always some cool stuff. You get that many awesome people in the same space, it's going to happen. We'll loop back around to why the awesome stuff happening in panels is, in fact, a problem this year. We'll get to that. Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'm finally going to play Battlefront and enjoy it.
Yay.
Because I'm not a multiplayer person. But I do love me a single-player campaign, and that game did look gorgeous. So what EA showed us was incredible. We'll link to the trailer you can watch. On this episode's page. And there was also some stuff they showed us that didn't get shown anywhere else, which I will talk about. The single-player campaign is one of the most heavily integrated pieces of new canon Star Wars lore that has been made to date. It ties into so many things. It ties into the Shattered Empire comic books. It ties into a forthcoming novel which was developed alongside of it. It ties into Return of the Jedi. It ties into The Force Awakens. It ties into a number of things in between. It's being made by some hardcore Star Wars fans who love taking opportunities to better link this universe and fill it in. Hell, I would dare say it probably ties into that role-playing mobile game. I can't remember the name. generic named role-playing mobile game that we all played for a while. Yeah. It made my phone overheat.
One of the co-writers of the campaign is the writer from Spec Ops: The Line, and if anybody listening has played Spec Ops, they'll know that is one of the most interestingly written FPSs. I don't even know if it was
a third person, but still
third person, just, right?
Still is. It got it all up in your head.
It really did.
Messed with you.
And so I'm really looking forward to the potential of a era spanning campaign like that.
Yeah. It focuses on the leader of a special forces division of Imperial Trooper, which has never been prior explored. When they announced the book, Inferno Squadron, which we talked about in the last episode, Matt and I both wondered, well, they just recently, in an arc of the Star Wars comic, Jason Aaron's Star Wars, had a specialist platoon of stormtroopers that were kind of like merc stormtroopers. They all had their own deals. Each of them was sort of an individual, and they were raising hell and doing a good job. Isn't it weird that this book, set immediately after the events of Rogue One, as a response to the rebels fucking the Empire over in such a severe way, would not be about those guys? Well, turns out it's because it's about this special forces team, the Inferno Squadron, that it report directly to the Emperor, not just those goons that Vader hired to track down some rebels. These people are referred to by other stormtroopers as special forces. You see them in the trailer. They're on Endor, and a trooper's like, "Special forces? When did you guys get here?" And they're like, "That's the point." And they all look up at the sky, and the Death Star explodes.
Yeah, it's pretty great. You mentioned the tie-ins. One of the other great ones that people noticed in the trailer was there was a red figure with a hologram face that was walking around on the bridge of one of the Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
And those were in the Aftermath novels. They were called Sentinels, I believe. And yes. It's Palpatine's face holographically projected, and they're part of the Imperial propaganda machine that Palpatine was actually, in fact, okay, and essentially still issuing commands from some hidden place that he managed to avoid the Death Star's
destruction. And I straight up saw them in detail in the behind-the-scenes featurette that they showed to the audience after they cut the stream. And yeah, it is exactly that. It is gorgeously rendered. It was really cool. So
Sam Witwer, could you tell if it was Sam Witwer voicing the Emperor?
It's definitely Sam Witwer voicing the Emperor. He's in the trailer.
Love that man.
Yeah. I mean, who else would it be, right?
Right. Got to be at this point.
Ian McDermott would be cool.
The Senate himself.
So it follows the story, this game follows the story of Iden Verso. She's the commander of the Inferno Squad, and she is the daughter of a heavily decorated Imperial general whose name I have written down somewhere, but I gotta find it because there's a lot of notes here. Anyway, regardless of that, the idea of this game is, who are the heroes of the Empire? What is it that makes people enlist to be stormtroopers and be loyal? So we know the heroes of the Rebel Alliance. Who are the heroes of the Empire during the Palpatine era? And this is kind of the answer to that. She comes from a planet that her father took over, put under Imperial protection, and they like it that way. This is not the Imperial occupation we so often see in Rebels. This is what it looks aesthetically like, much like the sort of futuristic late 20th century Berlin is portrayed in Man in the High Castle or Fritz Lang's Metropolis. It looks like that, but with huge red Imperial flags everywhere. So this is an Imperial planet through and through. She comes from that. You'll see this location in the game. It's an all new planet, which again, my notes were all scribbled in near darkness during the show. Oh, it's called Vardos. This is the continuity of the Inferno Squad this whole time. However, you don't just play this character. Somehow, and they didn't explain how, somehow during the arc of the story, you also play as Luke Skywalker and Kylo Ren. Make of that what you will.
Oh, just like little cutaways and stuff, you know?
Ooh, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, they really did not go into it.
I would like to play Luke during the operation in Shattered Empire. That'd be cool.
Well, the host of that stage got really excited, asked a bunch of questions, got shut down.
Wow.
Again, make of that what you will.
Cool. That's exciting. I need good... I mean, the old LucasArts games added some of the best... Star Wars expanded content there was. I think that's a lot of the sort of plasma of the Star Wars, lore that we're missing in this new universe is like video game fill-in. I think the comics have been doing a great job. I think the books are getting there.
Well, the games are still getting there too. Like, they're still...
Yeah,
I mean, gearing up for the one that's still unannounced.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Doug, because something I noticed... as I mentioned before, it was no longer the EA Star Wars panel. It was the Star Wars Battlefront 2 panel. No mention for the first time at Celebration since Disney took over of the Visceral Games game. Now, I personally have heard from some people that know people at Visceral that have come and gone as if that game is undergoing complete
this
hell.
Was to be the spiritual successor to 1313 and the Star Wars action game.
With Amy Hennig from the Uncharted series like kind of leading and just... This is the first time they've had no mention, and keeping in mind that the previous two times that they've had her involved in Celebration, she's been awful. I mean, she's got a particular kind of prickly personality that is just not good for being on stage. And I have a feeling that game may never see the light of day.
Just because it's in so much turmoil now?
Yeah. The curse of 1313 continues.
That poor game.
It's 213s. What'd you expect?
Doubling down.
So other quick notes for fans of this game, people who want to play it. Well, that multiplayer just got a hell of a lot better. It's got many things that were missing from the original Battlefronts and more. Classes, abilities, building a squad of troopers who could potentially take on a hero first and foremost. Well, or not first and foremost, but like collectively. More heroes, hero vehicles, space battles.
Prequels,
clone troopers, battle droids. Kamino was shown quite a bit. So if you love the original Battlefront games, they're finally going to give you everything you wanted.
Tauntauns, very key.
Rideable Tauntauns, yeah. You know, they make you play Hoth again and again and again, but I don't think you've ever been able to ride a goddamn Tauntaun in the middle of it.
Battlefront 2.
Oh, yeah?
I believe the Tauntauns, okay. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it looks cool as hell. Also, one interesting note about the Inferno Squad is that Iden has a Inquisitor-style droid clip onto her back. It's like one of those tiny probes that the Inquisitors use, and it clips onto the back of her armor.
That's cool.
You'll see this in the trailer.
It actually makes me wonder if the probably not related at all, but how the Inquisitor program is doing by that point.
Yeah.
By Return of the Jedi.
Does it evolve? Oh, and the droids somehow are programmable. Like, there's a whole droid control aspect to this. Like, it's a game mechanic. I don't know. They didn't go into it, but it's there. And it's exciting. That release date is November 17th of this year, which is pretty neat. So, yeah, that's Battlefront. That's the Battlefront tangent. And like I mentioned, there's a lot to say about Rogue One. There was a Marvel panel, which was kind of a disappointment, really. They had a book panel for Del Rey, of all things, wherein they announced that there was a Captain Phasma miniseries coming out, written by Kelly Thompson, who I haven't always loved her work, but recently it's been very strong. Her run on Hawkeye that's recently started has been great. She writes Gem and the Holograms, but her recent Misfits book is 1,000 times better. So I'm excited for that, and it takes place immediately following or during Force Awakens. It shows how Phasma gets out of how Phasma survives the Starkiller debacle.
Ugh, does she get a red arm? Yes or no?
I hope it's 5 issues of just out of the trash compactor.
Like, just in real time.
In real time with, you know, all kinds of, like, I mean, going through just all kinds of harrowing things down there. Going through the planet core, going through the, you know, a bunch of Dianogas, like maybe like Flaming Dianogas or something.
Flaming Dianogas. Sounds like a great band name.
So they announced that book, and I thought, oh, surely they're rolling that into the Marvel panel. But they didn't. They did recently announce, as we spoke about in our last episode, that Charles Soule, writer of Poe Dameron and Lando and Obi-Wan and Anakin, is doing an ongoing Darth Vader book set not just after episode 3, but it turns out immediately following episode 3, as in it begins from the moment after. No! You see, essentially, they've described this as a horror book, mm-hmm. where Vader goes on a path of existential destruction across the galaxy, because he realizes in that moment, that no moment, which looks so cheesy on screen because it fucking is, but in Charles Soule's powerful tools of comic book validation, what he said was, whenever Vader looks at himself in the mirror, he thinks, okay, so I either embrace being this nightmarish other person, or I go completely insane, trapped in this hell body, which I have been condemned to. Mm-hmm. So becoming Vader is the path of pure anger, the path that Anakin was perhaps never courageous enough to go down in terms of Sith logic. And we're going to see him get his red lightsaber, which will be acquired through the means outlined in the Ahsoka novel on how a lightsaber kyber crystal is bled. Yeah, we will see him track down remaining Jedi, including, they said, known characters who will be put to death at Vader's hand.
Oh, so new canon deaths. That's fun.
Yeah.
They're going to bring Mace Windu back just for that, just to kill him. I'll be so mad. Like, Soul Sam Jackson.
I hope we get a good dichotomy between Vader of this era and Vader of, well, I guess the unfortunate part, if this is Vader going on self-discovery, Kieran Gillen's Vader was also sort of a self-discovery journey post Yavin because of the news that he got in issue one.
Yeah.
So I wonder when we get. So far, the most like pure Vader that we've ever gotten is the hallway scene in Rogue One. Mm, I mean, that's him at the height of his power, not really going through existential journeys.
Yeah, he knows who he is at that point.
So they showed us some interior art. They showed us the first three pages of the first issue. This book's not coming out for a little while, but like in a couple months or so. And the covers for issues 2 and 3. Issue 3 has a Jedi on the cover whose name is Kurak Ifilla. I'm probably saying it wrong. I wrote it down phonetically so I could try to remember it as best as possible. I don't think he's. I think he's new.
Interesting.
And that was it. It was an hour long panel, and there were some neat little notes that were discussed. But I thought that they were going to really get into more news and announcements and so on, and that didn't really happen. It was a fun discussion regardless. But at the very end, they did a thing which I will present it to you. As it was presented to me, which is, I feel, completely inconclusive, and I wouldn't get anybody's hopes up at all. But they asked the audience in a very leading way which era they would like a new Star Wars comic from. Prequel, original trilogy, or new stuff. And there was a little bit of prodding like comments from audience early on about, we want Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. So naturally, based on that Ahsoka seed, the prequel era got more love than it would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And this led...
I vehemently disagree. I think everyone just remembers how good the prequel era of comics was. Because it was. All the stories in the prequel era were the best from the old X-Men universe.
Well, the way that the discussion kind of went down between the stage and the audience, it was definitely like, if you a vote for the prequels of era was a vote for Ahsoka. And then it ended up getting narrowed into like, so episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, and this is all by audience response. Oh, episode 3, okay, and they were like, what about afterwards, the audience? Like, okay, so do you want, like, during episode 3, or do you want, like, after episode 3, before episode 4? And, like...
What garbage.
So, yeah, just leading to, like, now let's pick some characters at random about... Okay,
so let's say Ahsoka.
Yeah, basically, a long, 10-minute-long tease for maybe there could be an Ahsoka comic. And maybe there could be. Maybe there could be. But that's all I can leave you with, because it was so much fluff that I couldn't even say, and guys, guess what? State of the Empire exclusive. It's going to be an Ahsoka comic. I believe it. I don't believe it. But it could happen.
All this teasing with, you know, extra stuff with the comics, and now that we know that Rebels is ending with season 4.
Well, then that's where I'm going to posit my theory. I think we're going to get a follow-up series to Rebels that focuses on Ahsoka. That focuses on her life between episodes 3 and 4, closer to the original trilogy era, like The Empire at its height. And I think we will get a Kanan the Last Padawan-like comic series about Ahsoka that takes place after episode 3.
That's a good theory.
But does it end with her dying? or does she live? Your insights aren't that clear.
I can tell you what I want.
Difficult to see the future is.
I want Ahsoka to be captured because she decides that she can reach Anakin. Mm. And
Poetry rhymes, exactly. We talked about that.
Yeah. Vader to bring her to the Emperor. Yeah. For the Emperor to zap her to death, and she's crying out for Anakin to help her.
And he doesn't do it.
And he just stares.
Yeah.
And I still want her to be on Alderaan anticipating the return of General Kenobi.
I think
her on Alderaan is too
high-fiving Bail Organa.
I mean, that's great, but like, there's much more.
Bail, my main man.
there's more stories for her leading up to, you know, like Return of the Jedi, if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Because she has to die in order for Yoda to say, you know, Luke, when I'm gone, last of the Jedi will you be.
Well, to be fair, she left the Order.
Oh, but that's fucking bullshit. That's like, you know, there's got to be. That's like, all right, with that same logic, it'd be like watching the teaser for The Last Jedi, and he's like, it's time for the Jedi to end. It's like, well, it has fucking ended, because as soon as you decide that there shouldn't be any more, there it is, because you're the last Jedi. Right. It's like, that's that same logic, so no, I don't think so.
And that's, by the way, people listening for 50 minutes already and thinking, when are they going to assess that episode 8 trailer? What's wrong with these people? hey, that's a fair question. What is wrong with this?
Yeah.
It's a we love Star Wars so much, we went down these other rabbit holes instead of the glaring obvious.
Well, it's like, no, hold on. Because everyone had a chance to see the trailer. If you've already seen the trailer, you already have your own thoughts. But we're trying to give you the stuff that you didn't get to see. The stuff that you weren't there for.
We will get to that. We will get to that. I think that Dave Filoni is going to be at the heart of anything that happens with Ahsoka going forward. We know that.
Sure.
Yes. Like, and his t-shirt.
His t-shirt switched from a question mark to an exclamation mark. It was Ahsoka Lives?
It was Ahsoka Lives.
And then the lights went out. When it came back on, he had some tape over it, and it was an exclamation mark.
I'm telling you, this next series is going to be about Ahsoka.
So here's the thing. I think there's also something to be said about a show featuring Rebels characters that takes place after Jedi, based on Hera's appearance in Forces of Destiny.
Are you okay with Kanan and Ezra? I know you aren't, Doug.
What about them living?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I love those characters, but they need to die. Like
I don't know that they're going to be Jedi. I think something like there's a possibility that something like legit happens to them because and this will help
get frozen in carbonite, safe and sound.
This will bleed
until we thaw them out.
This will bleed into the conversation about everything we saw in regards to episode 8. That as we've mentioned time and time again, the story group seeds meta narratives in different places, just like how we had so many different mentions of Kyber crystals and the mythology of Kyber crystals leading up to Rogue One. We have had an even larger narrative pertaining to the imbalance of the Force being the polarization of the Force.
Right.
Mm. And that the line, the most of all the things that we saw in the trailer for episode 8, the most important thing was what we heard. And that was Luke's narration, which points directly to all the different things that have been occurring in transmedia properties lately. Talking about the Jedi, what the Jedi represented. They represented a religious order based on a certain degree of emotional repression, a repression that in many ways caused the existence of Darth Vader. That Anakin Skywalker, had he not been... I mean, he was manipulated by Palpatine. Make no mistake about that. But in many ways, the repression of the Jedi, as we understood them in the prequels, were a major component.
And
they strung
him along a little bit too.
And think about... What did we, growing up, understand the Jedi to be? We understood it to be what Obi-Wan Kenobi told us.
Yeah.
And that's Luke learned the same things we learned about the Jedi, that they were the peacekeepers of the galaxy, that they were basically badass heraldic swashbucklers doing cool stuff.
But then when he reads the books or opens the holocrons or whatever he
does. Yeah, I mean, his through line so far for post-Return of the Jedi has been that he's on a quest to... I mean, both we got this in Force Awakens and in the Star Wars ongoing, or that he's reconnecting... Like, he's searching out Jedi lore and history.
Dude, is this version of Luke going to be a meta commentary for how we feel about the prequels? Like, how he learns about the Jedi and he was misled.
But stop right there. Not just the prequels. Also Force Awakens itself.
Yeah.
Because Force Awakens is such a remake.
Yeah.
And yet it leads to the same conclusions. You have the... You know, the apprentice that goes bad, the giant super weapon, the Imperials marching through and destroy, fighting the resistance.
God, if they make Luke that guy who's just like, I see through this bullshit.
Look, when we do things the same way, we end up with the same movies, we end up with the same orders, we end up with the same stuff. So it's
in order for things
to
move on, the Jedi have to end. So yeah, are we going to launch another discussion about
this
now?
This is it right now.
Okay. We're going to go full bore because it's the thing about that line, everyone's like, oh my God, like the initial reaction was like, oh, it's shocking. You know, it's whatever. I was more of like, oh, that's fucking obvious. Like as soon as he said it, I'm just like,
I was 100%. Shocked at how bold faced they were being about it. Because we've been discussing this for months now.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. I just, I felt... affirmation.
I was like, yes, Luke, yes, kill the Jedi Order, fuck those assholes, because it's possible,
you gotta think bigger,
it's possible that following all the things that he found led him down a path that created Ben Solo,
being like the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems will slip through your
fingers.
And you
know? I mean, we even went there in the prequels. Once again, I mean, we talk about this quite often. George Lucas did a terrible job portraying that the Jedi Order in the prequels was at their decline.
Yeah.
That this wasn't the, like, Ben Kenobi.
Let that sink in. Let that sink in. Like, if you've never heard anybody say that before, because I really hadn't heard anybody say it before until Matt said it to me.
Like, I mean,
Mace Windu. Their powers were weakening. They couldn't see.
Mace Windu says to Yoda, it's time to tell the Senate that we can't even see what's going on in the Force anymore. You know, that basically,
fucking
like,
Palpatine's under their nose, like, and he's in the spotlight, like, and they still can't see
it. This Jedi Order in the prequel films is an order that is basically, like, they're just an arm of the, like, they're just, like, this weird religious police force that is at the mercy of the Senate.
And miraculously, as obvious as George Lucas is, with his references and with everything else,
dialogue is all on the nose.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
That was so subtle, no one gets it.
Exactly. Yeah. And the most key scene to all of that was the one that he cut at the end of Revenge of the Sith, when Yoda is meditating and he starts to hear Liam Neeson's voice tell him that, like, I've transcended death. Let me show you what the Force is supposed to be about. And they went back to the Clone Wars, and in the Netflix episodes, the exclusive season 6, Liam Neeson reprises his role and essentially reenacts that scene.
Yoda's
with Yoda.
Like, in disbelief.
And in disbelief, and actually, like,
Yoda is in disbelief. Again, let that sink in.
Yeah, Yoda, the Yoda of the prequels, the Yoda of the prequels and the Yoda of Empire Strikes Back, that is a transformed, like, person. And, you know, it's this idea of, like, the living Force and being in connection with nature and all this stuff. And, like, we got to keep in mind that the Jedi Knights, the heroes of peace and justice of the galaxy and everything else, like, that Obi-Wan tells Luke about, is not the Jedi of the prequels. It's the Jedi of thousands of years ago that were probably more like knights errant doing good deeds.
I'm, like, restraining myself right now because I could just dive into, like, how this is so clearly George Lucas's interpretation of, like, Joseph Campbell mythology.
Right.
Like, because Joseph Campbell always talked about how people would... If you're of a religious nature, you could, like, the goal is to live in a meditation, seeking nirvana, seeking that balance, like, when you're trying to do that. And the way a priest lives, you know, either in a church or, like back in the old days, when, like, they would, like, literally live in the church and be, like, be surrounded by it all the time, living in a meditation.
Right.
That's what Yoda's doing on Dagobah.
And think about the Jedi of the prequels. They're just crusaders.
Yes, yes.
They're being manipulated by okay, so a bunch of star systems are going independent.
Let's go fight. You know,
of taxation issues. And they're like, no, we're gonna now fight you for occupation of these different planets
over fucking money. You know what I mean? Like, it's right. Yeah, it's so yeah.
That is not a Jedi Order worth looking up to, and it scares me that the conclusions that, like, that people, you know, people we know, including. That the people that the conclusions that they're jumping to, that, like,
let's give him a shout out. Hey, Colin Peterson,
hi, Colin
this one's
Peterson,
for you.
Yeah. that
if you're listening to Nerdy Show, you know who this is.
Yeah, that the Jedi Order ending is about some sort of meeting in the middle and going gray thing. And it's not about, like, this weird meeting in the middle. It's about going back to what the idyllic idea of what a Jedi should be.
Yes.
And I think that's where
the Jedi that we as fans, as consumers,
were led to believe existed.
Yes. Yeah. The Jedi that we believed in were not the Jedi that were actualized, which is part of the reason the prequels are so fucking miserable to begin with. And we're gonna get the return of the Jedi that we believed in.
Right. Yeah. Right. And who knows what they, you know, as far as, like, I doubt Disney renames what order comes out of this. Like, I don't think they'll go away from the term Jedi because there's just so much money involved in that sort of thing. But, like,
this new Jedi Order,
it's going to be a Jedi Order that is less dogmatic than the prequels and is much more of a you know,
attuned to the living Force.
Yeah, exactly. You know? This is the direction. This is solving the prequels, solving the similarities that Force Awakens has to A New Hope, showing that if we don't change the way things are, we can't just kill the bad guys to go back to the glory days. You also have to change, you know, what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope and think that's where it's going.
If,
and
I hope if we better be right, because this feels right.
Just remember the one of the most public defenders of the prequels over the last couple of years, Rian Johnson on Twitter. You know, like,
I did not remember that.
Oh, yeah. He went in and like, basically he saw somebody bad mouthing the prequels. And I wish I had them in front of me right now, the tweets. But he would, like, kind of came out and was just like, after somebody kind of rips into the prequels, Rian Johnson replies with, psst, Devil's Advocate, the prequels are a 7-hour long kids movie about how fear of loss turns good people into fascists.
And then shrugging emoji. Yeah.
Yes, and then of course the shrugging emoji. And of course, like most good people, they lose the first arm somehow in the shruggy. But it's true. And the Jedi Order manufactured that fear of loss for Anakin. Mm. Because, you know, it was all about detachment.
And Palpatine exploited it because he knew that he had it.
Have you ever heard of the tragedy of Darth Plagueis?
No, I haven't.
It's not a story that Jedi Order would tell you.
So that's I'm glad you brought that up because I don't know I'd heard about it, and if I had, I'd forgotten it. And that's really important. I think that speaks to what he's done, and as far as how the film looks, everything we've seen so far looks amazing. Did the stream see the screenshots that we saw?
No.
We saw some screenshots. They were gorgeous. We saw Laura Dern's character briefly. These were black and white photos taken by Rian Johnson on his old Leica camera. Some great snaps. I hope they published them.
They did. Yeah. I've seen some articles about them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I actually kind of meant like in a photo book, like after the film's out.
Oh, right,
like
right,
all
right.
Of them.
Yeah, yeah. it's just, you know, to finish up my message to Colin. I don't think we have to worry that Christopher Nolan is writing this movie about, like, you know, the
because
like,
Colin is concerned that this is going to be grimdark, like,
and just, you know, of course, once again, like the real enemy is, you know, man himself. Like,
no,
it's not.
I don't think Luke is being sad in a cave somewhere. I think Luke is enlightened.
Yeah, if anything, this movie is the opposite of that. Yeah. This is like, I'm trying to remove that man is his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to get you back to what Jedi should be.
And I think that Rey is, he might be in a grim place when Rey finds him. I mean, shit, Han Solo's dead.
Yeah.
But
Luke may believe that it's just not possible, that the cycle has to continue.
But you better believe that Rey is, within the course of this film, going to open his heart all the way back up, and we're going to see our Luke Skywalker back on
the
screen.
And look what Rey is right now. I mean, she is sort of that embodiment of the living force ideal. Like, she literally just helpful and positive and, you know, still a, you know, cunning warrior. And, like Rey is more of a Jedi Knight than any person that's, like, initially more of a Jedi Knight than anyone that's been on screen so
and
far.
And I can't wait to hear the explanation for that.
Right.
But
because look at this way. Like,
but I like her.
Everyone pulls up the comparison, like, oh, well, Rey's just like a female Luke in New Hope. And it's like, yeah, and who better for Luke to meet when he's at a low moment than someone that would remind him of himself? Like, the way she views what Jedi are, she goes, Luke Skywalker, I thought he was a myth. I thought the Jedi were a myth. Like, the myth that she heard isn't that they were in decline and that they were like, you know, emotionless monks, you know, fighting for trade taxation laws. She heard the romantic stuff, the same stuff that Luke heard. But then when Luke goes looking for the history and he just reads this bloody history of like a cycle that repeats itself over and over and over again, and he's like, we got to shake it up. And now she shows up. Now's the perfect opportunity. It's that energy that they need to forge a new direction.
Now, there was some weird stuff in that trailer. Mm-hmm. For example, books. Because there are no books in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, never seen any printed paper.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is the Claudia Gray novel Bloodline made a very, what I thought was strange, a very pointed... like, basically, there was a written down note, and Leia, that was weird for the Star Wars galaxy.
Leia gets tipped off that there's a bomb, and it's in a note that's been hand-scripted.
I think it's on, like, a napkin, like, on her table, which, first of all, I find even no matter how futuristic we get, there can't be, like, I find it hard to believe that written communication, like, I mean, there's backwater worlds in the Star Wars galaxy. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's graffiti on the walls. Of course written communication is still
Sabine
does
spray paint.
It's just a very strange thing to include in the novel, but... was very pointed about talking about it. And Rian Johnson was very involved in this story's conception because he needed it to play into the politics of episode 8 and the power struggles and everything else. So my thought there is that when I saw those books, I think that might be a thing too, is that like...
Well, this is old Republic stuff.
Yeah. And the symbol there is the Jedi...
The
order
Jedi
symbol,
Order, yes.
Which didn't exist until the prequels were made.
Correct.
But now in continuity, we have no idea how old it is.
Right.
Interesting.
Yep.
That's very interesting.
Very interesting.
The most exciting thing I saw was the presence of the salt flats in Bolivia, which we told you about last episode. And then just after we recorded that episode making Star Wars had this big expose about, hey, we hear something happened in Bolivia.
What's crazy to me is that we've known about Dubrovnik, Croatia's filming for just, I mean, months and months and months. Like, you know, all this stuff. And all this stuff on Skellig Michael, obviously. Yeah. But we knew about that from episode 7. But then when it came to it, like, all of a sudden Bolivia happened. And then Bolivia ended up being the only, like, new planet in the film. Or in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy to me how quickly this Bolivia thing has, like, unraveled. But yet, like, the Dubrovnik Canto Bite, Casino Bright,
we
whatever
still haven't
it
seen
is.
It.
Like, we, yeah, nothing about it. Not a thing.
Yeah. And there's some.
Or did we?
There's these things, they're called skimmers? Or is that like, I mean, there's no official name for them.
Yeah, I've seen now two sources refer to them as skimmers.
There's these things that kind of look like bee wings skimming red dust on the surface. We've heard Making Star Wars reported that that the world, which is called Crate, or
it's C R A I T. I haven't heard anyone say it out loud yet.
Could be Crite.
Could be
Crate or Crite. I mean, we were wrong about Scarif, which is now Scarif.
Yeah.
That it is a mining world where the resistance gets ore and gems to both fund their projects and also to use. And it's something dating back to a resource they used as the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they reported. We don't know how true it is. And certainly that footage does nothing to even suggest or imply that. But we also heard about walkers approaching in that scene. And in fact, you can see some boxy dots in the horizon.
Blech.
That might end up being the most concerning thing about this teaser.
Yeah, yeah. For me, at least.
Yeah, it's...
But there was another thing that you really got your goat, Matt.
Well, it wasn't even that it was concerning. It's just a legit complaint of a waste of 3 seconds.
Well, that's true. My biggest issue, though, with the trailer was Finn. Like,
shot
why? What a wasted shot. We know he's in a coma. That shot does nothing to even show us where he is. That
it
shot
just shows you he's in the movie,
and
as if you weren't expecting it anyway.
Why not give us like some like
show him running? He got better.
In a new costume. Yeah. Him on a ship. Him like, why do you waste a shot of him in a coma? Like I just that is the most sloppy marketing filmmaking I've ever seen. Like that's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, they just maybe any shot of him doing something really cool like, was a little spoilerific.
I want to be clear about this movie. Like, yeah, but I mean, based on the way they filmed Rogue One, there's probably lots of shots they won't use.
Finn's storyline is going to be the thing featuring the most stuff we don't know about.
Yeah. Right.
It's Dubrovnik. It's the new character played by Kelly Marie Tran, whose character's name is Rose. And maybe the stuff with Laura Dern and Leia. And Leia's hairdo is incredible in this movie. And also, Carrie Fisher... did script doctoring on episode 8. How wonderful is that?
So it's awesome.
She and Rian Johnson bonded as writers and hung out for like 6 hours plus on end, and he'd scribble notes and alter things. And you know, there
That's
was
awesome.
Lots of criticism about her stilted performance in episode 7, which I understand. It was not great. But maybe now that she's like, I don't know what JJ's method was, but maybe now that she's like writing her own lines, potentially, this will be a very good swan song for Leia.
I mean, she's already like I think it was Kathleen Kennedy already said that she's terrific in episode 8.
Yeah.
She's not going to say she's terrible.
I know, but it's also something like
she's still a little stilted. Give her some time. They would never say that.
But always people always point that out. Someone's not going to say that someone's bad. But also someone also doesn't have to say anything.
Right.
Like, and I think the fact that like they pointed that out in particular, and
maybe
people,
means
people
we have
already,
more scenes with her than we realize, because there were
also people are going to pay a lot more attention now that she has had her tragic unfortunate death. But so like I don't think you want to bring attention that like you have an opinion that it's great unless like it is at least good.
Yeah.
But I just want to be clear also, by the way, I like what I see in the trailer. This movie still like gives me a lot of, I mean, I think this movie's gonna be fantastic, but I think that trailer was terrible.
It was a terribly cut trailer.
It reminded me of the very first Force Awakens teaser we got, where it was just a bunch of shots and you just sort of
but
go,
those were still exciting shots. I mean, they still showed us
I mean, it's Finn popping up, BB-8 rolls around, stormtroopers are shaking.
Yeah, but Rey's cool, Fudgesicle speeder. It gave us the cross guard lightsaber. I mean, that's it.
That teaser was showing us stuff that at the time we'd never seen before.
Right. No, correct. Yeah. I'm just saying. But in terms of story context, right. It was literally zero. So this is the same thing. It's just with characters we've already seen before.
But also it was like narrated by a character we knew nothing about at the time, Snoke, which was really cool. Like, you know, something like there was so much.
It's almost the same teaser. Even you have a shot of the Falcon coming in with ties behind it.
I know, but not well chosen shots this time.
I would agree totally. But
like, it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe they just really wanted to save everything for some crazy. Like, maybe Dubrovnik is too crazy to show on screen.
Wait, which points to this being a very weirdly protective celebration.
Right.
Harkening in potentially a new era of even greater secrecy protection, and
which I guess is good.
Way to go, guys. We blew it with Rogue One. The movie just got so much. I mean, when the reshoot rumors first started, I mean, that movie just was being torn apart by fans as if they'd already seen it, including us. I mean, we all did it. I mean, you know,
I was optimistic. I didn't tear shit up.
I mean, optimistic, but like still just criticizing.
Expressed concern of just like, hey, how come you went ahead and did this?
I will say,
you
know, mostly to me, I think we mostly criticized the process of being so shady about what you're redoing in the movie.
Oh, yeah, because they had Anthony Breznican bold-faced lying about what was happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Which we all, we had. Like,
well, now we can be lied to and won't know it. That's the thing.
There's a difference between the way like publicists and marketers, when they get their involvement now with the production process, is they need to spin it in the most positive way. But like the disasters on set for various things on Empire and Jedi, I mean, those are like legendary things. Like,
and now we'll never get to know them or revel in them unless like somehow the curtain goes down later down the line.
This is the, you know, the downside of social media interaction is they see. You know,
that plus the whole phenomenon of the Disney vault.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah. Now let's talk about the convention. Okay. So one would assume you pay hundreds of dollars to get your pass and you go in and you have an equal chance to see and do anything and everything. And with Star Wars Celebration, if you're not familiar with how it works, they have a really modest-sized dealer hall spread out in a way that offers way, way more space for people to move around in a convention setting. It's kind of nice, actually, but there's not too much there. It's only official Star Wars merchandise allowed. There's a special section for approved artists to sell their wares. But no one doing their own fan projects. That's not allowed. There's signings. There's an exclusive store. The real heart of the show is the panels. That's where all the coolest stuff happens. That's where anything exclusive that's happening is happening there. In this case, they had the celebration stage was in this sort of large, small opera house style amphitheater built into the convention center. And the main stage, the galaxy stage, was in a smaller convention area. Neither remotely seated as many people as in the stadium present at Anaheim. And yet they were doing bigger things. So people were, as usual, waiting in line overnight, and less people were able to get in. Now, Matt, I had a different experience than usual this year, a little bit, because we were only, via consequence of sound, we were only given one media pass, which is highly unusual, but that was apparently par the course for most folks. And I'm also covering due to some strange serendipity, the largest Russian science fiction magazine, Mir Fantastiki. And only through Mir Fantastiki's credentials did I get access via press wristband to all of the biggest shows. Otherwise, I would not have been able to get in as media. I would have been less than media, but less than media. It's a very strange situation. And that's fine because the show is for the fans and media should face restrictions. Though it also had a lot of press announcements, so it's difficult to juggle those two things.
Right.
Which is it, guys?
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to see a bunch of stuff, do a bunch of stuff. But Matt, you had a 4-day pass. So why don't you talk about your experience?
So,
because I think it's very telling of what's happening now.
It is. I mean, these 40 passes aren't, you know, they're not inexpensive. That's for sure.
No, they're
not.
I
mean, they're, you know, I it's been a while since I bought the tickets, but they were, you know, quite, you know, it's quite
hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, hundreds of dollars plus travel, plus hotels and, you know, everything else. And now, because of the line culture, the line systems have been standardized into very specific rules, like, you know, times that they're allowed to start queuing up for overnights, nights that they're allowed to have overnights. And even it's gotten to the point where all of the panels are wristbanded and you were limited in the number of wristbands you could get. So as a normal ticket holder, you could only have two. So you had to choose, like,
and what, this is not panels. All panels, but it was the big panels,
the big panels,
the big ones that everybody wants to get.
Yes, into. Everything on the celebration stage, the galaxy stage, and the behind the scenes stage. So when you would go in, the first thing you saw before you even got into the expo hall queue was a series of line shoots that was like, you have to go down and then get your wristband, but you were limited to only two on your right hand. So you had to, like, you know, after already paying a bunch of money, you had to then decide, you had to sacrifice your, you know, your ability to, you know, want to go to certain things or able to go to certain things.
Yeah.
So it was almost an extra premium. It's gotten to the point where it would have made more sense just to have an online system to buy wristbands for these panels. I would feel less offended if they did that. If Last Jedi was like, oh, and, you know, tack on $30 for a Last Jedi wristband, or, you know, blah, 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 like, they're making these people show up at 3 a.m. or actually the,
like,
line,
make your choice.
The line started at like 8 p.m. and it's like, now you get your wristband and now you got to wait in the queue. Like it was so, I mean, Funko's like vendor booth did a digital line system where you would get a reservation to go into Funko's booth to buy stuff. The Star Wars show, or I'm sorry, the Star Wars store, the official celebration store.
Oh man.
Was a 4-hour line to get in, to browse some merch that was exclusive, but mostly t-shirts, like 90% of the stock was t-shirts, and then get into a checkout line that was an hour long.
What?
They had a fast pass option for the store, where you could come back during certain half hour periods and just be let in. But by the time, like, those would sell out, I mean, not sell out, but, like, you know, they would be distributed just like Disney, like,
and be done, yeah,
within an hour of the show floor opening. And then you would get inside and still have that hour checkout line, but also, like, your time, you know, if it was like 3 p.m., you go in and, like, everything's cleaned out for the day.
Yeah.
Like, the Lego store had a massive line that was like an hour long to get in. Like, okay, so the Funko one that I already mentioned, online you could buy a reservation at some point up to 2 p.m. And if at 2 p.m., they would open it up to an actual traditional line. But because it was a line, people were queuing up for the 2 p.m. opening at 10 in the morning when the show floor would open.
What the fuck?
So people were sitting on the floor in a line for 4 hours to be let into the Funko booth.
This is wrong. This is fucked up, and none of us should participate in it.
And we shouldn't. And this isn't just this convention. This is becoming a weird norm that,
for,
like,
for nerd culture.
For nerd culture in big conventions. And, like, it has to come to some sort of, like the dam has to break. Like, you know, the levies just have to, like we shouldn't be doing this for, like, exclusives and, like...
This is why I didn't go, because I didn't want to sit in line.
Well, and also,
you know,
because we didn't get the press pass for you.
No, that's true. but even then, I would have been like, you know what, I'm not going to go, because I had things to do. I have editing for Nerdy Show, I have other things I got to do. And then it's like, I don't want to go sit in line to get into a store,
right,
and then be shooed out.
A store, you know, that is on the property of something that you've already purchased admission to.
Yeah.
To get to the expo floor, you've already purchased $150
plus. You spend money
to
wait in line, to spend money to wait in line.
To not go to the fun things because you weren't there at 8 p.m.
Yeah,
the previous night.
You know, if that panel's going on, the one that you got the wristband for, if that panel's happening while you're waiting in line for a Funko Pop that you could get online three days later... Sorry, you know.
If I didn't have my media credentials, this would have been a miserable show.
Yeah, I will never buy another 4-day pass for this event. Like, I, even if it's in Anaheim,
because
it's
it was
be something
kind of a miserable show for you, right?
It was a miserable show, and I'll be honest. Like, that's the other thing too. Like, for those that did wait in those lines overnight, like, don't fool yourself. Like, you're there as a marketing tool. You're being used for the goodwill of, you know, Rian Johnson, and by the way, Rian Johnson looks legitimately, like, happy and And, you know, like, I mean, very humbled by the experience of all the people waiting.
What you're referencing here is that Rian Johnson spent 4 hours in line with people in the middle of the night, hanging out, signing autographs, talking to people.
Right.
For the Force Awakens panel.
But make no mistake, that was done with the intention of having lots of photos, lots of social media.
So everyone goes, official, oh my god.
The official Disney photographers out there taking pictures and posting it online so that there are articles in Entertainment Weekly and Hollywood Reporter and Variety and all those things.
Everyone's
that are saying,
talking about
Star Wars is huge. Star Wars is great. You need to get on the Star Wars bandwagon and be one of these awesome fans. And like, yeah, they are awesome fans. But you're being used. Like, there's no reason that system has to exist, especially
these are huge movies that everybody wants to see. This is entirely unnecessary.
And these
cool products, these cool limited edition products, they are limited edition because they know there's only a small like group of people who want something that's that nuanced within our subculture. But that doesn't mean that they should subject people to this. In fact, it really in no way benefits these companies at all, except for the potential of advertising the hype that they had.
Right. And then that it goes on to the panels themselves. The hosts they choose for these panels. By the way, everybody, I mean, the hosts that Lucasfilm and Disney and Reed Pop or whoever gets, they're usually like, they do a good job.
They're genuine people who actually love this stuff and are actually knowledgeable.
Yes. And I mean, I will not fault them themselves, but the coaching they get to constantly mention how much of a fan they are and how they're the work that the panel guests are doing, and I'm not talking about necessarily the actors and filmmakers, but also like the behind the scenes people, the, you know, production designers and the creators and all these people behind the scenes, they're constantly coming back and saying, oh, the work we're doing is because we know as fans ourselves what fans like you want. And then pause for some cheering. And I mean, nothing was bigger example of this than the Disney Parks panel, which was one of the giant, the biggest circle jerks I've ever seen. They gave away like no real information except just some very, 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 very lofty expectations of interactivity that like there's going to be like
this is Star Wars land you're talking
about. Yes, that like resistance fighters like fighting with stormtroopers in the streets and like, you know, basically stunt shows in front of you, and that like the actions you might take on the Millennium Falcon ride might end up putting a bounty on you, that if you're in the cantina later, a bounty hunter might come get you, and like all these weird like, you know, some really
I remember similar promises about the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, there's some
I would
lofty,
love to see all that come to fruition, but it is impossible, especially in crowds that big.
Yeah, and the crowds will not subside for years. So you won't get to have that intimate experience. I really don't think that this is like they're
planning
for this.
By the time
properly.
Those crowds subside, all those things will have been phased out already.
Right. I mean, by the time, I mean, for, yeah, exactly. Because
after the third time somebody kicks a droid over that's a free roaming droid, they're going to pull the droid off the street. You know
yeah,
what I'm
saying? And for all, like, you know, you can't keep paying stunt actors that long. Like, yeah. Like, you know, they can't, that's going to be for the first year for the spectacle.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to, I mean, I want it to be great. Like, I, you know, I want it to be a dream come true. And that's what they, but they kept saying over and over again that they're doing it as fans themselves. As since I was a boy, I, you know, would draw Star Wars and wish I was on the planet. And like, I don't know.
And how are you going to have a stormtrooper shootout against resistance fighters when there's no laser bolts?
Well, I don't think there was any shooting. It was more like
pew pew.
They showed us a training video going on right now. And it was basically like Rey kicking ass type thing. You know, like with a staff and crashing
like
the carts.
And like Jin with a baton. Like,
very much so.
Yeah. Whatever. It's like, stop her. Why don't we use our weapons? I don't know.
Right.
Like,
so,
because there's innocent civilians nearby. Yeah. Holster that weapon, soldier.
And, you know, they said they're going to add like canon history to this planet so that this planet has clearly been something that's been part of the Star Wars universe for thousands of years. And like, you know, all kinds of weird. I'm sure the technology in there is going to be awesome. But there's no way the lofty expectations they're setting up. As much as I hated this panel, it is worth a watch just to watch how bad like that part of the panel was. The first half of the panel was great. We got some great inside information on like what went into the creation of Star Tours, and Anthony Daniels was there, and they confirmed that the crate planet, whatever they're calling it for episode 8, will be added to Star Tours by this holiday season.
Nice.
So that's going to be really cool.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, I love the premise of this. I just don't believe when I see it. But what you were saying about the pandering from the hosts in the scripting, it's just a shame. It's just a shame that they don't respect us enough to treat us like people. not people. We as nerds and as fans are but cattle to them. And I get it. They're a big corporation, but it's like, but these people who are telling us these things, they are fans. They don't need to be poked and prodded.
Right.
I do this kind of hosting work when I'm at conventions, smaller conventions, where I don't have someone coaching me on what to say, and I do just fine.
And dude, when we were at the one in Anaheim, the most genuine panel that I saw was the one that Cap, I think you and I went to. It was for the like the line producers panel for Star Wars Rebels, and they used to work on Clone Wars, and they were just like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to fill this hall. Like they were like, we were so surprised that people want to hear what it's like to be a line producer. Anyway, here we go. And they show you spreadsheets and shit. And like, it would otherwise be so boring, but they were so endearing the entire time because they legitimately didn't think anybody would show up.
And there are cool things like that. Like, we didn't have something as specific as line producers, that, at least not that I
right,
saw.
Right, but just, yeah.
Like, I saw Doug Chang, the production art dude, since episode one, draw. For the first time in years with markers, because he's all digital now because the film production has ramped up. So, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful watching him work. And he gave out, you know, like practical pointers for anybody who's into that kind of work, as I am. And so it was really great to see him do that, to see his craft. And there was other wonderful experiences like that. I mean, that was not it's something you had to get a wristband for, but it was something you had to definitely show up early for, which is fine. That's you know, if you wait in line, like a regular, normal line.
If it's just first come, first serve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a mess. It was a genuine mess. In fact, it was so much of a mess from a logistics perspective that they actually issued an apology at the end of the first day and promised that there would be more opportunities to load into the convention center and not just one entrance and... where apparently things were strangled up in terms of people. And
that's, you know, because once you go beyond formalizing this sort of like line waiting nerd culture, like that's when you tend to screw up. Like, you know, there was a time when it was, you know, fun and exciting to see, and Star Wars contributed a lot to that line culture. I mean, literally starting in 1977.
Yeah.
But we don't need to contribute to this. Like, I want to point that out too. I think Reed Pop did a terrible job with the show overall. Like, nothing made any sense at all. But us as fans kind of are to blame for it too. Like, as much as, you know, Lucasfilm and ABC, you know, Disney and everything else with the pandering,
we can demand that they do better. We can demand, say, you know what? I don't really want to do that. I'm not going to wait in line for this. And they're just like, well, why not? Because I'm like the same dude here. I think here's a decent example. I can't remember where I read it online, but it was a legit source, like legit news site that said, someone from EA said that there's going to be no season pass for Battlefront 2.
Right.
And it's just like, gee, I wonder what made them decide to do that. Do you think maybe it's that fans were pissed off and saying, I'm not paying for this, don't do this ever again? But instead, they spin it like, you know, we were listening to the fans and we said, we want more people to play together and to divide them up. That's not good. It's like, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's a win for EA.
Yeah, you knew that when you divided it up in the first place, but you just said, here's a way to get extra money. But then when you got the negative, you know, knee-jerk reaction, it was, oh, they bite back, you know, and so.
Yeah, the Xbox One version of the game was almost dead in
population.
You
have that power, too. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, you could make it happen.
They actually, there was a moment where they're like, and we have some pre-order bonuses we're really excited about, and the crowd goes, boo! And they're like, hold on. They're really cool. You just pre-order, and you get some extra, extra costumes.
Costumes.
And, yeah.
And that's another thing that we need to understand, too. There is no problem buying the $60 version of the game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, unless obviously some games do put stuff like game breaking or, you know, competitive advantage type stuff in $70 versions and plus. But like, you know, don't support the $70 version of the game if it's
game.
Unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, personally, I will probably buy the $70 version of the game because I like what they're adding for the $70. But I've had no issues buying the $60 version of the first Battlefront. It was fine.
Oh, I should add, there is actually one interesting piece of news involving the pre-order for Battlefront. That it's Rey, Kylo, the Falcon, because the ships are, you know, the ships are heroes too now. You get you fly a hero ship.
Yep.
And a TBD First Order Starfighter,
which is the rumored Kylo Ren TIE fighter.
Yeah. So just that's a thing. So look forward to that soon. but not the pre-order unless you want it. Because it's just a pre-order. I mean, you either want the game or you don't.
Exactly. So. And it might be cooler to watch other people fly around in it. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm gonna wait and see what people say after they play it for the first time. Because I did the same thing for the first Battlefront. When I finally played it, my expectations were more realistic, as that it was a half-completed game. It was more like a training level for Battlefront 2. But hey, it is what it is, and it's still fun. But because of that, I have different expectations.
Yeah. So that about does it for our Star Wars Celebration panel. I found a couple other things worth noting. One is that in the Poe Dameron comic, Mr. Bones from Aftermath is going to show up. Yeah. And there's going to be a character death in issue 13, which is the next issue.
Whoa.
And in issue 14, there's going to be a funeral, which Charles Soule wrote as a kind of like just after Carrie Fisher had died. So there's some of that embedded into the story. And we were shown a clip from Clone Wars that is, I believe, canonical and has never aired, much like the Bad Batch episodes, or a clip we saw back in Anaheim 2 years ago. Featuring an episode on Tatooine, it would seem, where Boba Fett was under the tutelage of Cad Bane. In this sequence, which Dave Filoni indicated took a whole bunch of time to be cleared by Lucasfilm to be shown, we see Cad Bane and Boba Fett in a Western-style gunfight. This is all in the roughest animatics possible, 3D animatics, I should add. Quick shots between their guns, their eyes, their hands, their fingers twitching. Boom, 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 it builds up, and then bam! They fire on one another, and this is because something, I don't really understand the context, but something bad has happened between the two of them. Like, there's a hostage involved, and they're having some kind of falling out. Both of them go down. Cad Bane might be dead. We don't know. But Boba, what you see is his helmet on the ground with a dent right in it, and that's how Boba Fett got a dent in his helmet. It was showdown with Cad Bane. Pretty cool.
I mean, sounds freaking awesome.
Plo cool, in fact.
Oh, boy. That's a whole nother level.
And before we go, I want to give you a little bit of a Willow Watch update. In the last episode, we put out a call because there's going to be no Star Wars Celebration next year. In fact, it's happening in 2019. And we want to do something for Willow's 30th anniversary, which is in 2018. We want to put on a Willow convention somehow. We don't know how we're going to do this. We know that we might need to talk directly to Lucasfilm, and they might say no immediately. We don't know what we want. We just want to do something publicly where people can gather together and talk about Willow for just one day. Invite everybody we know. Network it. Try to get some appearances from people we've never met before. Maybe Willow himself. While we can grease those wheels, make those connections happen, and do all that work, we don't run events. We don't know about running events. And that means that we need your help. So if you would like to help us put on a Willow convention in 2018. We don't know if it's possible, but we want to explore that possibility. So drop us a line, info@nerdyshow.com. All our remaining notes, the cool things we saw, well, all that pertains to Rebels and Rogue One, and we'll be focusing on those in episodes to come. So stay tuned for that. And again, if you like what we do, definitely head to nerdyshow.com/support. where you'll find links to our Patreon, our Amazon store, a way you can give us a one-time donation. And also, you should rate and review the show on iTunes, because that's the only way that people can discover us. Unless, of course, you want to tell a friend. That's also an option. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us for State of the Empire. If you have any thoughts or feelings on it, be sure to comment on this, or maybe join us in the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group if you're stout of heart and not afraid of a spoiler or two. Or a lot.
Or all of them. Yeah. Like all the spoilers we hear.
But that's our kind of our live hub for communicating with everybody. So if you want to go there, there's the price of entry, and that is the knowledge going into a film. But hey, whatever. It's just a stupid movie anyway, right?